And without missing a fucking beat, I go, it's the meth capital of Arkansas.
Hey guys, it's T. I'm going to be joined tonight by my friends Des and Laura to talk about crime TV. And we are going to start out talking about Criminal Minds, but I have no doubt that this is going to devolve very quickly into other TV shows that make us scream, that's not how it works! That's not how any of this works! Because we're lawyers, and that's how we test our ethics. You can find me on Tumblr at Law School Ruined Me, or on Twitter at My JD Ruined Me, because Twitter won't let me have my full handle. I am a lawyer in Ontario, Canada, and it is still full of fucking snow here.
Hi, I'm Laura. You can find me at Tip of the Scepter on Tumblr or at Laurels413 on Twitter, which is where I'm more likely to be these days. I am a legal aid lawyer in Illinois, and I specialize in criminal records relief.
My name is Des. You can find me in 4 months, probably, when I check Tumblr again at Bathtub Barrister, or on Twitter at Desi Ray, which is mostly just me retweeting people and being passive-aggressive as shit. I am an M&A tax lawyer in Chicago, where there also is snow, and I went to the grocery store in shorts.
I remember I was watching an episode of Criminal Minds during, like, the last lockdown, and I was texting my friend, and I was like, none of these guys have to ever consider, like, any of the rules of evidence because they keep shooting the bad guy.
Be real, Doyle's son is set up for life because of everything that they fucking did in that.
Oh, yeah.
I've been rewatching Criminal Minds preparing for this, and I just finished that episode last night.
Like, so much is done that's wrong. You know what gets me about that episode in particular is they're, like, dealing with this senator who's like, you're all going to get at least fired or whatever. And what...
And not a single one of them does.
None of them. But what saves them is Emily Prentice just, like, quoting the oath that they took to go into the FBI. And it's like, that's...
Protect and serve the Constitution, my ass.
Like, every time I watch that episode, I'm like, that's nice, but, like, if I'm the senator, I'm like, that was a very beautiful quoting, and I'm glad you remember your oath. Anyway, you're all fired and probably going to jail.
No, they just sweep it under the rug.
Remember that time we let Hawk beat a guy to death? Yeah, it's fine.
And that one didn't even get any sort of, like, beyond Strauss. Like, she talks with them, and she's like, okay, I've heard enough. Like, no, that's not how it works.
And they had this whole arc, too, with Strauss being like, your whole team's a bunch of renegades. Like, you've got, in the second season, the first girl.
Elle,
right, yes. Elle Greenaway, that's what it was. Yeah, so she, like, shoots a guy, and they're like, we know she did it, but we can't prove she did it, so we're just going to quietly transfer her away. And Strauss seems to be the only one who cares, but she also only cares because it's a power trip. Like, nobody cares about anybody's constitutional rights in this.
And what's really funny is, like, the rare episode where they try to bring something like that up, they get it wrong, like, every single time. They're like, oh, we can't go in without this. Like, there's the episode where, like, Emily and Hotch are both not supposed to be there because, like, Hotch is suspended and switching teams, and Emily decides to, like, quit instead of turning on the team. And they're like, Emily's like, oh, I can go in because I'm not a member of the team. And I'm like, that's not how it works.
Like, I'm just a private citizen.
I mean, technically, she's acting as an independent agent, free of government anything.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, but also, Emily's whole arc this whole time was that she never wanted to be in D.C. She was only in D.C. for this boy. And then Hotch gets kicked off the TV show for whatever shit what's-his-name did. And then she ends up the head of the whole unit.
Oh, you mean this, like, the third time that she was back? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I never made it past, like, season 10 yet. I haven't gotten that far.
Well, no, yeah. Because, like, so there's the whole, she originally comes in as, like, she's supposed to be Strauss's spy, and she doesn't do that. And then she dies but doesn't die, and then she comes back after that for a little bit, and then she leaves the team again, so that's like twice that she was in the team. And then she came back after Derek left, and then they were having that situation where the guy who played Hotches, finally people are realizing he's an asshole and he gets fired. And they bring her back.
Again.
They're like, now you lead the team.
Which, I mean, I appreciate because Rossi was retired once. And if they had asked him to lead the team, I'd be like, didn't he retire already? He's got like white hair.
Segue for Rossi and Gideon. See what I did there. So, I have my own opinions that are very strong about Gideon's leaving.
But like, it's interesting to think of the reason that the actor for Gideon left, because you kind of wonder, like, what did you think the show was going to be?
I think they sold it to him as something like Law and Order, where it wasn't necessarily focused on this, like, I mean, SVU is whatever the fuck SVU is. I hate that show. But, like, the other two aren't necessarily always fixated on this, like, objectifying women's bodies in the crime. And I think that was the issue with him in Criminal Minds, is that he felt like it was just constantly, like, it's these little blonde women that are constantly getting killed by the serial killers because they're the attractive people that they're always after. Or what's his name that kept her head in the freezer for, like, a fucking year.
Oh my gosh, that episode was so weird. The first episode, the, like, main woman that they're worried about is alive at the end, right? Like, they rescue her, and it's really exciting. And that's, like, a big part of, like, you kind of, like, it, I think it drew a lot of people in because it was like, oh, there wasn't, like, an active dead body going on. It was, you knew people had died, but instead it was like, oh, are they going to get to, you got attached to this one character. And then they, like, never have that happen again. Like, the rest of the series, the, like, first victim you get attached to, they're like, and now they're dead.
Yeah, I mean, we get sometimes like the abduction cases, but it's quite often it's like, hey, there's three dead people and we got to the city and it just so happens that as we got there, somebody else has been abducted and we have 24 hours based on this guy's pattern to save her. And maybe we'll save her and maybe we'll be too late. But that guy usually ends up dead. Could you imagine Derek Morgan having to testify in court?
I think that's actually the fact that they like are never, there's like one scene where they're actually in court the entire series, I think is part of what makes it a little bit more watchable for me, because I'm not sitting there like as an attorney going, this is not how the hearing would go. This is, and the one scene where they are in court where like Hotch is being questioned by a defense attorney, it's like totally not like how court would go at all. But it's the only time it really happens. So you're not sitting there. It's not like an episode of a TV show where I'm sitting there going, that's not how court works or something like that. But instead, I spend the entire time going, oh, wow, that was a great way to make sure that that evidence isn't admissible. But then they die at the end. Like 90% of the like unsubs are just like dead. So you're like, well, I guess it doesn't matter.
This is going to be me being a tax lawyer and knowing nothing. Are federal criminal like court procedures different than state?
I don't know, I'm Canadian.
Not like overly so. And most of what I know, even like related to actual criminal law stuff, is more federal, because that's what I learned in law school, was like the federal rules of evidence and how federal things work. And I don't actually do, like, in my area of law, I don't do any sort of true trials or like putting on a ton of evidence or anything like that. I just do a lot of quick like bench hearings essentially. But just from knowing like, oh, this is how, like, even just really basic lawyering things that would happen, like there would be an objection here, or the attorney would be like, I didn't ask you a question, stop talking, and things like that. And it was just things like that where I'm so used to it in a lot of the like more crime criminal procedure sort of shows where they're like, and now we're in court. Whereas like with Criminal Minds, they hardly ever make it to court, and it's kind of nice because, again, I can't imagine how Derek Morgan would justify like half of the physical things he does.
You just got to get him Jack McCoy, man.
So there I was, I decided that I needed to kick this door down.
Okay, but interesting segue. I've never actually watched the credits of Criminal Minds, so I don't know what they do. But the original Law & Order and Law & Order Criminal Intent, one of their credits was to Westlaw. Like, if you watch it, Westlaw is literally in the sights. Also, did you know that the original Law and Order is fucking coming back to TV? Beside the point, I found out during the Super Bowl. But in the credits originally, they were cited, but I never saw that in SVU, which I just fucking hate Olivia Bennett. But that's beside the point.
But I think it's an interesting point because there's a ton of, like, crime procedurals, like Bones, for example, where you've always got at least a couple episodes where they are testifying in court or they talk about, like, oh, today I'm testifying kind of thing. Could you imagine, like, them having to testify to any of these things? Because, like, I was actually just watching the episode with the guy who abducts his daughter and, like, keeps her in a basement because he's convinced that...
Fire guy?
Yeah, the fire guy, because he's convinced that everything is, like, a holy grail kind of thing. And Reed just happens to have this key that was given to him in his pocket, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, chain of evidence! Oh, yeah, where was this key? Oh, it was in my pocket, Your Honor.
How'd you get this key? It was mailed to me.
It was mailed to him, and he took it into the BAU. Like, he showed up, and he's like, I got this key, or whatever. It would not have just, like, been kept on him, no matter how much they were like, oh, this is clearly important to what's going on. That would have been in an evidence bag. They would have been like, okay, this is evidence.
I put it in my carry-on. Because he came back from Las Vegas with it.
He came back from Las Vegas and he was like, yeah, here. I'm like, that's not, no, you would have gone to the local office.
Let the nerd through. It's fine.
It's okay. The guy dies.
And they've got, and in the same episode, they've got Reed's mom, like, in the conference room, quote unquote, consulting with him. And I'm like, you have evidence all over this board. Do you know how much fun a defense lawyer would have with that on you basing your evidentiary procedure on a paranoid schizophrenic who was left unsupervised in a room with evidence taped to the wall? It's fine because he's dead.
Exactly. I wonder percentage. I'm going to Google this. Percentage of criminal minds suspects that die.
It's going to be so high.
Only 24% of 266 as of October 27th, 2020. It also tells me who the most trigger happy are. Oh, God. Okay, I'm opening this.
Amazing. My money's on Hotch.
Aaron Hotchner is responsible for the largest slice with 19 of the kills. Who do you think is second?
Derek Morgan.
Brassy?
Derek Morgan.
Ah, there it is. Yep. But, like, Hotch is a prosecutor. He's like, I've screwed up all this evidence. If I just kill him, I never have to explain it.
Through 233 episodes of the show, there was a greater chance of an upsub being killed by one of these two than any other outcome aside from getting arrested. Given all the myriad of things that can happen, the poster writes, one or two characters having such high odds, are there any repercussions for shooting someone in the criminal minds first?
No, there aren't.
We don't even fill out paperwork. Like, there's not like, oh, incident report because I've discharged my firearm. Nothing.
Yeah, they never talk. The only time is when Elle shot that guy. And then they were like, oh, like the local police were like, we cleared her.
I don't know why I hate her so much, but I do.
They didn't really have good time to develop her character. And that was actually even part of it, was that, like, the actress herself didn't feel like she was really fitting and imbibing in with everything going on. So that was part of why she was like, I would like to not be on this show anymore. And they, instead of killing her off, they were like, okay, we'll just have you kill somebody in cold blood and have, like, a breakdown. And then, I mean, they could have killed her off, right? Because in the Fisher King episode, he shot her. She could have died, but then they were like, no, we need to give her a better send-off. Or actually, I guess I don't know for sure if they even knew at the time that she wanted to leave, or if it was, like, after that.
I don't know what her contract negotiations were like, but I think it's, like, true of a lot of the procedural stuff. Like, NCIS, for example, like, they had a different female actress in the first season who they also killed off because she just, like, wasn't vibing with the rest of them in the same way.
I loved Katie.
Kate was great.
See, I love that actress in Rizzoli and Isles. I think she's fantastic in that. And I think my love of Ziva in NCIS just like kind of erases that whole first season with Kate.
I wanted to be a behavioral analysis unit person in high school because of this show.
Didn't we all?
Then I fucking am a tax lawyer, so here we are.
Have either of you guys seen Mindhunters?
I've seen, so I started watching it, and then I was watching it during law school, and that was when I decided, like, during law school, I was incapable of watching a new show because I needed to be able to, like, just have something on in the background, which is why I just kept watching Criminal Minds over and over and over again. So I need to get back into it.
That's like me and Lie to Me. I don't want to know how many times I watched that show. Please never give me that stat, Hulu.
You've watched this episode 16 times. Thanks, Hulu. Stop judging me.
Oh, it's probably higher than that, honestly. It's a good show. It's another crime show.
I love Lie to Me. I think Lie to Me is fantastic.
I wish it had so many more seasons than it did.
And I think Lie to Me, I've always said that new show that they put out, Bull, that was the Michael Weatherly. Yeah, and he was like a consultant for juries. The way that they structured the like characters was very clearly they were trying to make Lie to Me 2.0. And they failed because Michael Weatherly sucks. But the reason I was bringing up Mindhunters was because they're technically about the same like branch of the FBI. Like Mindhunters is supposed to be when like the BAU was started in the very, very early days. And we actually, in some of the later seasons of Criminal Minds, we actually hear Rossi talk about those early days. And it's kind of fun to compare how the two shows looked at behavioral analysis in those early years. Because I think that...
I didn't realize Jonathan Groff was in it.
Yeah, he does a really good job. But it's interesting because I think the way that the Criminal Minds episodes, even those older ones, work is they do it much more like a sort of a cowboy show. Like it's two guys in a car and we're going out and we're trying to chase the bad guy. And they're always on the ground and they're always in the SWAT gear and they're like, they're always at the front door kicking it in. But with Mindhunters, they're very much in the police station. They're like, here is your profile. Here's what we think you're looking for. Sometimes they're just sitting around waiting for the cops to ask them for help so they can take them for coffee and say, we think that this is what you're doing. And they're never in that sort of action that our lovely Criminal Minds family is in.
Well, and it's funny because I'm pretty sure based on what I've read and like, actually, like, so Jim Clemente is one of the FBI behavioral analysis unit people that contributed into the creation of Criminal Minds. And then he has his own podcast that he does with a woman whose name escapes me, who has done work with like Scotland Yard and stuff like that. Her name escapes me, but I'm pretty sure her first name is Laura. So now I feel awful. It's called Real Crime Profile. And from what I've heard is that the Mindhunter setup is really more how life really is in the behavioral analysis unit. Is like they are not the ones out there like chasing down the bad guys and taking over investigations from like the local police department or things like that. But when we want our like crime drama TV shows, we want our crime drama TV shows. We want our cable news 7 p.m. on Thursdays or whenever Criminal Minds aired to be a show where we're like, yeah, they're going to go beat a bad guy.
I remember seeing an article, and I wish I could find it again or remember very much about it, but it was talking about the impact that these shows have and the general sentiment of fuck the police that has become rampant in the last few years, and how these shows tend to be watched more by people in the South, which generally tend to be less adverse to police. It was very interesting, and I wish I could actually find the article again, but I have no idea where I saw it.
Oh, God. I feel like that's like a whole other, like, can of worms, because that gets into, like...
You're welcome.
How does Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like, factor into...
Oh, they talked about that show, too, actually. They talked about all of them. Law and Order, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Criminal Minds. Criminal Minds just teaches me why I don't want to trust them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, so, like, we all went to law school. How, like, watching Criminal Minds, they get so much wrong. And how much do we think that that affects the general, I don't know, perceptions about how people are and should interact when there's a criminal investigation going on?
I think we probably end up with a lot of innocent people behind bars. Because they think, oh, they're not going to treat me like this if I'm innocent. Because there's not a lot of episodes about them doing that to the wrong people. Law and Order has done it a few times. Criminal Minds had the one episode about the doctor who was put in jail for 25 years for killing his wife and daughter. And then you later to find out after he gets out it wasn't him. But that's the only episode I can think of where they actually talk about it. And it wasn't even in a, like, there was no mention of, like, how he was wronged. It was just like, well, he didn't remember all these facts 25 years ago, so it's his fault. Okay.
Well, then there was an episode where it was like, there was a guy who had been wrongfully accused, and so it, like, completely destroyed his life. But then he ended up, like, killing somebody. Like, it ended up being like, and now I'm a bad guy. And I can't remember for sure what episode it is, because I also don't think, I think it was one of those, he was like a middleman for doing other bad things for somebody else as well. I think it's in one of the episodes where there's like a, there's the guy that's like going out there and like Mark Hamill's character or whatever, who's like going out and trying to like plant things for make like the BAU and like re-killing people from like previous serial killers and things like that. So he tries to pin it on that guy because that guy actually did do some of the things. It's like, oh, that's great. So first we're going to be like, yes, he was wrongfully accused, but it's okay because he ended up being a bad guy anyway.
Definitely don't try to step into some of those, like, as far as much as I hate SVU, they actually do address a lot of those, because I did finally watch some of the newer ones and they actually, like, had episodes, like, alluding to the Michael Floyd stuff. And, like, for at least all they get wrong, they actually acknowledge, like, the political environment around the cops and how it impacts their jobs, but Criminal Minds just never addressed it.
It's interesting because I feel like anytime they ever get like a little bit close to, we should consider the socioeconomics of the police coming into a community, they're like, here's Derek saying he was part of the Chicago police and he's a black man, so it's all fine. And he's going to go kick down the door.
He was accused of a crime he didn't commit, but does it count? No.
Sorry, that just made me...
It just blurred their plot point.
The whole Derek being accused of the crime he didn't commit thing makes me think about how that episode enrages me, because...
Because the other black guy that got put in jail anyway?
There's that. But, more importantly, very specific to my area specialty of practice, is that they're like, he has an expunged juvenile record. Well, unexpunge it or whatever, which, first of all, it's like, literally almost impossible.
All the time!
Yeah, all the time they're like, unseal it, unexpunge it. Like, first of all, it is much
more. Get to it, Garcia.
Like, Garcia's illegal hacking is going to destroy everything. It's much more difficult to get access into a sealed or expunged record because half the time there's literally just a paper file in a sealed envelope in a courthouse somewhere. But more importantly, they have a line in there, and I didn't catch it until recently, where they're like, it must have been a really understanding judge to expunge this record. And I'm like, no. Do you know how easy it is to get a juvenile record expunged in the state of Illinois? Like, the vast majority of, there is a huge proportion of them that are automatically expunged. And then, like, the only thing you can get expunged as a juvenile from your juvenile record in Illinois are, like, first-degree murder. And if you have to register on the juvenile sex offender registry. Everything else is eligible to be expunged.
We have a juvenile sex offender registry.
Yeah, it's, like, not available to the public. And
didn't know that.
Yeah.
Didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to Google it. I really want to Google it, but I'm not going to Google it.
You're not going to find
it. I don't need that showing up.
Like, it doesn't, you can't. Like,
what is it?
If anybody's on it. And the time on the registry is, like, much shorter. They used to have automatic lifetime, and then the Supreme Court was like, you cannot do that to juveniles. But yeah, anyway, so sorry, that was a total digression, but that episode just recently when I came across it in my 5 billionth rewatch of Criminal Minds, I was just like, I can't handle this because they're acting like it's this huge thing that this judge expunged it, and that's just so common.
And so I have two thoughts that come out of this. The first is the other thing that drives me crazy about that particular episode is Hotch, prosecutor, understands the laws. Like, do you want us to get a lawyer? And freaking Derek is like, I don't need a lawyer. I'm innocent.
What I was saying earlier.
No.
Well, Derek Morgan can get out of it because he was innocent. I can get out of it.
Yeah. And it absolutely perpetuates this idea that only guilty people ask for lawyers.
When they want you, it's like every time somebody does get a lawyer, they're like, they lawyered up. And like, it looks really bad.
They must be guilty.
Oh, shucks. Yeah. Now we can't suspend their constitutional rights and beat the shit out of them.
Oh, unfortunate.
I really wanted to throw that guy against a wall. There's a kid's life at stake. It's always a kid. We totally accept. We accept any level of abuse when it's a child at stake.
Like, there's the episode where there's like the girl, and for the I want to think she's a teenager. I can't remember for sure, but there are these two guys, and then they were like, we've been holding them in the police station for like 36 hours or whatever, and because they were the last ones to see her, and like, I'm sitting here like, are you kidding me? Like, you're just holding them in there for, and I know that you can do that, but like, I'm pretty sure they were minors in that episode. I don't remember for sure. It's possible that they were in college, but it was just absolutely wild to me. And then like, they solved it by like seeing her phone in a picture or whatever, and then redid like math and figured out how far away she would have to be. And
oh my God, the one where like the buddy rapes the guy's girlfriend. Yeah, and they're like, we saw a picture of her phone in the backseat of your car.
And her phone was in the room, so who took the phone back?
Yeah.
It wasn't his girlfriend. It was a girl visiting Florida. I just watched that episode.
Yeah, I can't remember. Were they in high school or were they in college?
I think college. Okay. I think she was 19.
Okay, so maybe they weren't minors. Maybe I'm a little bit less outraged about that, but it was just like...
But they did have a history of a lot of crimes when they were juveniles.
Okay, that's why I got all wrong.
Which I'm sure Garcia, in all of her magical powers, unearthed on her computer that totally would be admissible in court.
Well, they never said they were sealed records.
Like, I was just watching Fisher King, and Derek's on the phone with Garcia, and she's like, oh, it's a sealed record. And he's like, well, unseal it.
That's
like,
not how it works.
Does that really make you filthy?
Like, just from a purely, and I know I keep coming back to this, but just like the evidence side of this drives me so fucking crazy. And I think it's because I used to do civil litigation and I used to like have to explain to people what could.
Ooh, I heard syphilis litigation for a second, not civil litigation. I know I'm not at my computer, but my headphones don't have a connection problem. That is 100% what my brain interpreted that as. Okay.
So I used to do civil litigation.
Syphilis, okay.
And having to explain to people like how you could admit evidence and what could and couldn't be admitted, and just to like watch something like this and go, there is no way in bloody hell that you are going to explain to a judge and a jury that your magical keyboard wizard just hacked into some federal database or a judge's computer and unsealed a record, and that's what you then made subsequent decisions and arrests on. Like, fruit of the poison goddamn tree.
Crescent City gets the chain of evidence done better. I'm sitting here staring at my book as I pour another drink.
It's really bad because it's Garcia so many times. It's like, so then I did this and all of that, and I'm like, you did what now?
Illegal, Chantel.
Illegal.
I mean, to be fair, the FBI does actually recruit computer hackers from people that get caught hacking into shit they shouldn't.
So is it that surprising?
It's more just like that she keeps that they're like doing these things in these investigations where they are not getting any sort of like administrative, like, okay, we can do this because of this reason or any of that. It's just more like,
yeah, we haven't got a court order to unseal it. We don't have judges saying, okay, I'll sign your order tomorrow. Go ahead. Like, even, I come back to Bones because it's my, like, one of my favorite shows and I rewatch it a lot. There was an episode of Bones where they were literally at a judge's house at, like, midnight, ready to have a court order signed. To be like, okay, we need to dig up this body and, like, we need to do it tonight because this guy's on death row and going to die tomorrow. So here's the court order. I know you're in your pajamas, but I need you to sign it. And they at least follow that. And I don't think that anybody in Criminal Minds talks about getting court orders.
One time.
I think Hodge mentions it once.
Yeah. So it's literally, it might be once or twice because it's a time that it drives me nuts because it's another courtroom scene, sort of. And it's the episode where it's the court reporter who's the unsub, which I think is like a great, like, excellent idea. This person that has to sit here and hear all these things. And he's like, I'm just going to kill them anyway.
Oh, wasn't he going after the people that got declared innocent or something?
Yeah, they were like declared innocent, but they did like things he thought was bad because they were normally, it was like, oh, like he killed his parents in self-defense or whatever. And so they figure out what it is. And then Hotch pulls the courtroom bailiff and he's like, go get your judge. We're going to need a warrant. And I'm like, Hotch, you need a prosecutor. You need a local state's attorney to go get this warrant for you. You cannot, Mr. FBI guy, go up there and be like, here, judge, here's a warrant. Like, that's not how it works.
Once a prosecutor, always a prosecutor.
I was going to say, could he technically pull together a warrant request? I mean, I guess technically I could too, but we don't want me to. Where do you need this warrant for? The house. I do know that you have to get the right address. It's the duplex on the left, not the duplex on the right.
I'm just imagining Des just writing the house.
Like in the warrant affidavit, like, why do you... Where? The house?
Yes, I need this warrant for the house.
On the street, in the town. They did the bad thing.
In this one place. Across from the red and white house. Next door to the yellow house. It's got a shrub in the front.
And it's like a subdivision, so they all have shrubs in the front.
They all look exactly the same.
So I know Des hates Law & Order SVU, but Laura, I think you had said that you love SVU, right?
I do. I haven't gotten to watch.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay, because it's more like, when I say I love shows like that, I just more mean that, like, I just kind of get, like, obsessed with them or whatever. But I think that there's also a lot to hate about SVU, because I think SVU is one of, like, the worst for just being like, this is not correct. Like, I used to watch SVU a lot, but post law school, it's become one of those shows that I just like cannot, because too much of the courtroom stuff, I'm just like, this isn't how we do things. And I think I just...
You mean when Olivia lies about capturing that guy and beating him in the house?
Yeah, that's not cool.
I just can't stand her as a person. I hate Elle. I despise Olivia.
I confess, I have not watched a whole heck of a lot of any of the Law & Order shows. I think that there is like a small part in the back of my head when I was a child and I was sick and it was probably on TV in the afternoon. But other than that, I've got nothing. So how do you guys feel that the Law & Order shows compare to like shows like Criminal Minds?
Depends which Law & Order show, because they all handle things a little bit differently. SVU is a lot more out in the field. Law & Order is a lot more in the courtroom. Criminal Intent, there's kind of both. So it's different. I mean, SVU is literally always going to be almost 70% of the time women victims.
On that fun note, okay, so SVU is much more like courtroom stuff. Law & Order, the original, is like half and half. What is it?
Law & Order, the original, is more courtroom. SVU is less courtroom.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And then Criminal Intent is like in between. But who cares when you got Jack McCoy?
I mean, I think like what all of them have in common, right, is that it's all coming from a law enforcement good perspective. So it's like, oh, it's a bad thing if main characters lose because we want to root for the main character, which generally means that in a lot of them, the main characters end up doing things that if it was in real life, you'd be like, wow, that's really shitty. And I hope that they can't actually do that. And the good news is that like 90% of the time they can't actually do what they've done. Sometimes they can do shitty things and it gets away. And sometimes it's, they shouldn't be able to do that, but somehow it works out okay anyway. Like it's the whole old joke about like the bar exam, if you're doing the like crim pro sort of things and they're like, just figure out the answer that makes it so that the state wins. And
I didn't finish the series, so maybe I'm shooting off the belt wrong, but wasn't Blacklist one where she ends up like leaving the FBI because the FBI is corrupt, or was that just because of bad influence?
So she, I've watched up to season 7, I think, of The Blacklist. So I'm like,
you are so much further than me. I stopped after season 1.
Oh, okay. So, there is a period where she leaves the FBI because she literally shoots the attorney general.
What?
Yes. Yeah. She shoots the attorney general. Like takes the law into her own hands. It's like, you're a bad person and you're in this like cabal of bad people and nobody's going to do anything about it. And you've now threatened my family. So I'm going to shoot you.
And you said the word cabal and all I can think of is Sarah J. Moss.
I was like, did she think she was like Katniss or something? Like,
but in Blacklist, she like straight up takes law into her own hands, shoots the attorney general and that goes on the run, ends up coming back as a consultant. Cause even though she's technically like been absolved of the crime, like she still committed it.
How did she get absolved of it? What? She shot the attorney general and they were like, it's all good.
No. So there's some backroom power plays that like Reddington is doing that gets,
excellent.
Yeah, that gets people very, very high and powerful in the government to effectively absolve her of this crime and agree that he was a bad person and she's a patriot. And then he eventually blackmails the president.
What?
To give her a pardon so that she can rejoin the FBI because being an FBI agent was super important to her identity.
I don't think so a pardon doesn't just mean that like you get to still do whatever you want, like, no.
Well, yeah, so it was like this two-tier thing of like the national security advisor was like, the attorney general was actually a bad person and she's a patriot and we thank her and we're sorry that we conducted an international manhunt against her. But the FBI internally was like, yeah, you still committed a crime even if you were not charged with it. So like, we can't actually give you a badge and gun again. But I guess when the president pardons you for that crime, that rule no longer matters.
Oh, you know what show we haven't talked about? The Mentalist.
Oh my God.
I've never actually watched The Mentalist because I think that actor is a douche. And so
Simon Baker, oh, he 100% is, but he's so attractive. So it's fine.
The problem is when I was introduced to him as an actor, it was in The Devil Wears Prada. And I'm like, you fucking suck. Fuck you. And
I saw him in The Mentalist before The Devil Wears Prada.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, that was good.
Also, Andy's boyfriend also sucks in The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sucks so hard. But having that context of like him in that role, I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to watch this. What is The Mentalist about?
It is a famous psychic who outs himself as a fake and ends up working with the California Bureau of Investigation to find Red John, who is the man who murdered his family.
So he does like mentalist things. It's sort of like
his whole thing is kind of like Lie to Me,
mm-hmm.
a little bit. Like his whole thing is just like he's really good at watching people. He also used to be a con man as part of his psychic thing. So 5 years before the events in the show's pilot episode, he appeared on television to claim that paranormal abilities helped the police profile Red John the killer. Red John, angered by this perceived slight, then murders his wife and young daughter in revenge. Jane subsequently abandons his career and teams with the California Bureau of Investigation, using his skills to help them solve various crimes, although his main focus is always on Red John or the Red John copycat.
To kill the kids.
Because
kids are the best revenge.
Well, and then we all get emotionally invested, like, everything's okay because the kids were killed, so you can do whatever because we're talking about, like, save the children, T.
Yeah, okay, but, like, that seriously, I noticed that when I was doing my last Criminal Minds rewatch, was that, like, they kill kids a lot.
We do. Like,
and, like, I...
We gotta tug on the heartstrings.
Well, because I get the, like, get the Mandy Patinkin leaving and saying, I think that this is a little bit of just, like, murder porn about lots of inflicting of violence against women, but, like, they kill a lot of kids. And yet, none of these actors seem to have had a problem with that over, what, 15 years?
But Mandy is a man who is to be protected at all costs. I love him. Have I told you about my TikTok comment he liked?
Yes, you did. Yes.
I did?
Okay. You actually texted me when it happened.
I love him. Oh, I did? Yeah. Makes sense. I just think he is genuinely such a good person that he couldn't stand being on a show that, like, perpetuated that over and over and over and over.
I just would love to know the premise of what they told him then.
His TikToks are so pure, though, that I legitimately think that was his real reason. They are just so pure. If I ever find out anything bad about him, I will die.
I wonder if he didn't think that they were going to be, like, so many dead bodies, or the focus wasn't going to be on so much of the, like, gruesome facts of everything.
I think his specifically was the sexual assault of women.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's very rampant in the early seasons. I think they did better later about making it about other stuff, but before he left, most of the crimes are, like, sexual assaults against women.
Right.
And I think, like, that was his issue.
They were all getting raped and killed. Like, they weren't just getting killed. It was like, oh, they're also being raped. Or they were just being raped. They weren't being killed.
Yeah, I guess that's true, right? Because you could probably have shop the premise of the show as we hunt serial killers, and serial killers can come in many forms. And so we had in the early first season, I'm like literally looking at the episode guide now, we had
because he left after two seasons, it was pretty quick. I'm also looking at things about why he left.
Yeah, well, so no, I'm thinking about, like, the initial concept of the show was probably around, like, okay, we're going to have an episode about a bomber. We're going to have an episode about a arsonist. We had LDSK. We had the crazy one about the twins that was really, really early on. And I think that they probably stopped the idea of there will be a variety of serial killers that we will then try to track down. And the showrunners probably realized that serial killer translates super easily into guy who likes to go and take and beat the shit out of women. Because I think that, obviously, if we were going to talk about Criminal Minds, that Mandy Patinkin leaving is something that comes up. And we're three women talking about a show that we enjoy watching that is arguably absolutely horrible to many of its female victims. But we also have some really high profile female actresses who have done this show for over a decade, and I have a lot of respect for them. And so it's interesting to reconcile my professional respect for them and their book of work, and the fact that we have a man who left saying, I don't want to watch all of these women every week be brutalized.
I think he had a less concern, because I don't know them from anything else. I only know them because of Criminal Minds.
No, I mean,
he had a name outside of Criminal Minds.
I mean, the girl who plays Emily, Paigette Brewster.
Yeah.
She had done a ton of comedy before Criminal Minds. When she took one of the breaks, it was to go back to comedy acting, and she ended up coming back. The actress who joined in season 11 or 12, who had done the revival of Whose Line? Crap. What's her name?
Aisha Tyler.
Aisha Tyler, thank you. Yeah, no, Aisha Tyler's done tons of stuff all over the place. And again, has done comedy, too. And I wonder if it's that they can, I don't know if it's because they can compartmentalize. I don't know if it's just that as women, we're just so used to it that...
I think we're desensitized to it, but I also do think it got better in later episodes because, I mean, I know the actress that plays JJ was involved in, like, some of the directing and stuff, and so was Grubler. So, like, I think Pantigan leaving, I'd said his name wrong, I think Mandy leaving and then saying what he did years after the fact actually had a big impact on the show, though. Because after he left is when we saw some of those murderers, like the guy that kills Hodge's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was less about, like, the sexual desire and just, like, a weird thing. And we saw a lot more of the power dynamic that wasn't driven by sexual tension after he left.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even my mom was like, she got to a certain point where she couldn't watch Criminal Minds anymore either. So I think, I mean, I feel like as a whole, our generation is super desensitized to violence.
I feel like Criminal Minds is like the criminal tragedy version of Grey's Anatomy medical tragedy. Like every episode of Grey's Anatomy, we know there's going to be some sort of brutal surgical trauma. And every episode of Criminal Minds, we know that there is going to be some form of violence, but at least we get the catharsis of, you know, the bad guy gets caught at the end, but for like one or two times, like that weird guy who is the kid of the brother-sister duo, who flees away into the woods and they never catch him. But we usually get the catharsis of we've caught the bad guy. He can't hurt people anymore. Maybe that's part of it. Laura, what are you thinking? We keep chattering away.
So I was thinking more about like, oh, why is it that we're like, oh, it's okay. Like this people just keep getting brutalized on TV every week. It's fine. Or like I said, I just like repeatedly watch it. And part of it is, well, one, I think a little bit like what Des was saying of like, I think we all just kind of have skewed ideas of like what really watching traumatizes us. I mean, I grew up like I wasn't watching inappropriate things, but I was watching like Law and Order with my mom in the evenings growing up and things like that. Then I was thinking about how like I did actually have to desensitize myself to part of Criminal Minds because that's going to sound bad. But when I first started watching it back in like, gosh, when I was like watching it repeatedly, I think it started in like 2015. I could only get through the first couple of seasons before I'd be like, I'd be having nightmares or every time I heard something weird in my apartment, it was definitely the murderer, serial killer, rapist coming to get me. I don't know how he would have gotten to my apartment because where I was living, it would have been very difficult for a random murderer, serial killer, rapist to get inside. But in Criminal Minds, they always got inside. So I would have to like take a break. And then now it's gotten to the point where that's just like not a problem anymore. I don't sit there and be like, oh, this is too many like episodes where somebody's like getting murdered and all of that all the time because I've just like desensitized myself to it. I'm like, oh, like there's still a few episodes where I'm like, I don't care for this episode. Like the episode where there's a dude who like has special needs and he ends up like kidnapping his niece and like dipping her.
Oh, I just watched that episode.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, some fucking shit.
I did not watch that one very much.
I think part of it for me, too, is that I kind of became a little bit more desensitized after law school. Because, like, I remember the early years of Criminal Minds, because I think it came out in, like, 2005. So it had been on the air for a couple years while I was in high school, and I had a couple friends who just freaking loved it. And I was like, it's not really for me. This makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't want to watch this kind of stuff. And after being in law school and all of the fucked up things that you've got to learn about just to get through first year criminal law, I think that there's like a part of my brain that's just like, yeah, the world is super messed up and we're just going to put that in a little box over here. And I do estates work now, so dealing with trauma is just like part of my repertoire or wheelhouse. And
I mean, I deal with sociopaths because I'm in criminal or in corporate America. I have very interesting opinions on that, but I agree with all of this. I think law school desensitized us. Mm-hmm. But I also think, I mean, literally the shows I watched growing up with my parents were Law and mm-hmm. Order, Crossing Jordan, mm-hmm. The Mentalist. Like, it was always crime procedure. The Medium. Why the fuck I watched that, I don't know.
Oh, that
but I did.
So weird.
Right? So weird. Like, these were literally just shows I watched with my parents.
Well, and that was, like, all during law school, I would have it on in the background. So, like, the episode we were talking about earlier where Prentice and Hotch aren't really officially part of the team. They're just, they're, like, helping out. And then Prentice is like, I'll go in because, like, I'm not working for you guys. And I was studying for Crim Pro at the time in law school. And I was like, this is great. This is, like, I'm studying because, you know, you can't do that. And, I just want to say that watching Criminal Minds is not actually a great way to study in law school. But I think you were onto something, though, T, where you were like, I think that law school also desensitized me some, because I was just thinking about some of the cases that I had to read for Criminal Minds, or just like, or not for Criminal Minds, for criminal law. Some of the cases I had to read for Criminal Minds just to understand what's going on. No. In criminal law, just like some of the cases where it's like, and then he was like doing this, or like, and then a baby died. Or like in some of the torts cases where you're like, oh, that's pleasant to read about. And so you just kind of hit a point where you're like, this is fine.
I'm going to go in this little tiny box in the back of my head and I'm going to bury it in crafts.
I definitely watched the original Law and Order when I was in Crim Pro.
As like a way to study and be like, spot the ethics violations.
That is why I like the original Law and Order, because they got a lot of it right.
Do you think you can do the same thing with Criminal Minds? Because I feel like the
Criminal Minds, we don't spend as much time in court.
Well, then,
but I guess, I mean,
from like,
I mean, they do it all wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, like, from an evidence perspective, like, if you were going to take an evidence course, or if you, I don't know, if you wanted to be analyzing, is there actually an effective chain of custody or collection of evidence or things that I could actually argue in a courtroom without getting laughed out by the defense attorney and the judge? Or is it just the same mistakes over and over again?
I think it's the same mistakes over and over again, although there's probably exigent circumstances in some. But by that point, I knew I was not going to fucking be a litigation attorney. And I was like, I just got to pass this class and learn these 17 forms of hearsay long enough for the test and then immediately forget them.
Everything's hearsay until it's not hearsay, and there's probably a way to get it in. Actually, I think there is an episode where they say something like, but that's just hearsay, and I was in, it's either not hearsay or it definitely falls into an exception, or I'm just like, I believe me, it'll get in. Like,
I don't remember what episode it was, but I remember watching that over my last rewatch, and I just like screamed at the TV, and I was like, that's not even hearsay. The one time that you actually use the word and it's not even right.
Like, the one time you're worried about hearsay and you couldn't even get hearsay right. And there are, I mean, I think it's a little bit more nuanced. Like, I'd probably have to go through and be like, would this be a good episode? Like, again, the episode that I keep talking about where, like, Prentice just goes in. I'm like, that was a great one for being like, no, wait, this would not be, like, for Crim Pro. Like, this is still a violation because she is clearly acting with law enforcement and all of that. So that is still. But then they forget all the time about like exigent circumstances and how actually easy it is to meet that standard a lot of time. Like, there's also a lot of like, my issue is that when they do bring up like rules of evidence or things that they need to be concerned about, they always set the bar for it like way too high. They're like, oh, we are not going to have enough for that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you can get a warrant for like somebody looked at me funny.
Like, he sneezed in my general direction, so I think he's suspicious. Yes, here you go. Here's a search warrant. Go have fun, kids.
It's really difficult to, and like, and there's even just things too where it's sometimes things get resolved because it's like, oh, things might not have been quite kosher there, but in the end, we can actually fit it in under this thing instead because of what you found, or like, I don't know. And I think that's where it is it's like the few times that they do try to bring it up, they get it wrong. And then all the other times they don't even try. And then I'm just sitting there going like, wow, this is a fun adventure. In how many ways can we do this differently? It would almost be better to watch an episode and see, like, from what you saw in this episode, do you think that there would actually be able to be an effective case made?
Prosecutor even going to accept
that? Yeah.
You talk to a minor child without their parent present on multiple occasions.
It's fine. I guess I more, notice the more I watch it, and I think it did happen more during law school, because I did start, they say, you think like a lawyer. Criminal minds can, not keep so many of their stories straight. How Garcia joined the team, there's an earlier episode where it's supposed to be one of Garcia's first times there, and Morgan asks Reed, hey, what's the new girl's name? And Reed's like, oh, I think it's Gomez or whatever. And then later on, the actual episode where they show how Garcia got recruited, Morgan was a big part about pulling her in and all of that. There's that, or Emily Prentice's storyline just doesn't, you can tell that they were putting it together as they went.
Mm-hmm.
She also came in as a sixth stream. She can speak multiple languages. She's better at chess than Reed is. It's just it was they were trying to really sell her really fast. And then she was fine. And then all of a sudden you get this entire, she was actually a CIA agent and all of this stuff storyline where you're I don't understand if this was a plan from the beginning. But the one that gets me the most is Jack Hotchner's magical cousins.
I don't remember his cousins. I remember his brother.
The episode of Haley's funeral, they make a comment that Jack is playing with his cousins. But I do not understand how Jack has cousins, because Hotch only has a brother who is not married and doesn't have kids.
Brothers Hotchner, yep.
Well, Haley only has a sister who is not married and doesn't have kids. So Jack is playing with his cousins.
Jack is playing with ghosts.
And I mean, I'm sure it's one of those, I'm overthinking it, because it could be it's, cousins, and it's really second or third, cousins that are distant sort of thing. But it's just one of those things that I noticed that, when I started watching the show more and during law school, and when I started thinking through, I just started catching little things like that where I was they just cannot, nobody was keeping a good, they talk about, to write a good story or whatever, you should have, a really good understanding of your characters' various storylines and their family trees and stuff like that. And it's just things like that where I'm like, how do you mix that up? And I think, so Jack Hotchner's magical cousins, and then also Derek Morgan somehow not remembering Garcia's name and asking Reed, who was not present at the initial time that they brought Garcia into the FBI.
Well, and actually on the Garcia thing too, because I had just watched the episode from, I think it was season one or season two, where the CIA guy had died, and they bring the, and Gideon brings the BAU in to that CIA unit to figure out who his killer was. And Garcia and JJ are left at the BAU, and the CIA agent's watching her no, you can't come, you're on a list. And she's like, what do you mean I'm on a list? You were recruited for being a hacker. You don't think the CIA has you on a fucking list?
Exactly.
But it's funny, too, because I don't know if this is us being lawyers and, having a minute attention to detail, or just, the age of watching TV with the internet. Because, I forgive the mess ups that happened in the seasons of Friends. There's varying plot holes, for lack of a better word, on when each of the Friends' birthdays are, because clearly nobody was keeping track when they threw a one-off line into an episode. But those were airing in the late 90s, before we really thought about an internet database. If you've got a show that starts in 2005 and you're going to start accumulating these details, just fucking keep a website of them.
Right? It's so easy to keep track of that. Or
I do think we're also more observant as lawyers, though.
Well, we're definitely more pedantic. I think that's what it comes down to, is the normal person would be like, huh, that...
We're bigger assholes, you mean?
The normal person would be like, huh, that's weird that they said Jack has cousins. They don't talk about him. And wouldn't be sitting here going where are these cousins from? There's nobody that has cousins. Nobody's having kids. There's also Haley Hotchner's mom is mentioned in that episode and not her dad, but then the dad ends up being brought back like in later seasons because he's like losing, he's got Alzheimer's or dementia and all of that sort of thing. And again, it's like, so what happened to her mother? Like,
yeah, we're definitely much more like detail oriented in a way that's annoying. Other people would be like, this is an interesting trivia fact of like they mentioned this and it never happens again, and the lawyers in the room were like, but why, you could have just fixed it. What about you, Des? Any final thoughts?
I legitimately think most of corporate America, like CEOs, these powerful private equity guys, are sociopaths. Having dealt with them on a daily basis, I trust none of them. Do not date them.
Is it okay? Maybe I'm making this up, and maybe it wasn't like in a TV show, but wasn't there a study about like who becomes successful in corporate America? And mm-hmm. It's people who like
it's psychopaths. Yeah.
I was like, I feel like I've heard this, but I couldn't remember if maybe it was like in an episode of Criminal Minds.
It's actually a legitimate statistic.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Like you're like, did I see this in a TV show and think that it was a thing? Because that's happened sometimes. It'll be like a thing in Bones. And I'm like, oh, is that really a thing? Because I believe Temperance Brennan when she tells me anything.
Psychopathy is up to 12 times more common among senior management than in the general population. It's legitimate. And I mean, think about what the thing they do.
Are we going to go to school?
Yeah!